Mr. Abish, Reel 3. Could you continue to describe what was happening on Birkenau Station?
Well, there's lots of people milling about, and everybody trying to look for their fathers and mothers and their brothers first. And then, of course, the SS came and started pushing everybody along, you know, into herds. And we all came in front of SS, and he just decided, where you go, left or right. So with me, he stopped and he asked me how old I am. I said 16, but I wasn't 16 yet. And I made myself look fit and older, so I was going straight away on the left-hand side. And a certain amount, only a smaller amount, that went on the left. Majority actually went to the right on my day, which way we came out. When I may say left or right, the way we were facing the exit from the trains. We were standing there for a long while. I saw my father. Actually, I had a glimpse of my mother. I saw my brothers, and I saw lots of my cousins on the other side, some of them carrying their grandmothers and older people helping along, not knowing what is in store. Eventually, we were marched off. Took a long time somewhere to get to, and we arrived in a place where we undressed completely, and then everybody was shaven on all parts, and we left the clothes there. And oh yes, before we arrived to that place, we were standing for hours on end somewhere, and there was a hell of a lot of machine gun fire practically all afternoon that afternoon. I don't know if they had what they had, why should they have used a lot of firepower? Either it could be that some of my people from my hometown alone, they're quite, you know, not exactly, they're quite tough in some of them. Maybe they found out something and they were resisting. It's quite a possibility. Of course, nobody came out to actually tell the tale.
Was that going on actually inside the confines of the camp or in the
yes,
railway
yards? Yes, in the
confines
of the camp, but everything was far away because it was a huge, huge... Birkenau was very, very large, right? And there were many, many camps, and I did not notice at the time crematoriums or the ovens, not yet. So eventually we were marched into this hut, and we were undressed. We had shaven. There were the SS there and so on, but nobody mentioned to us anything about the sinister things that are happening.
How many of you were in these shower rooms at the time?
There couldn't have been more than a few dozen, you know, actually undressed. It was quite a big hut. You know, and it was all like benches, and there was fellas there, other prisoners who were shaving, you know, everybody, you know, beards and all parts and so on. And then we marched.
Were you asked any questions when you were there about your...
No, nothing at all. We didn't ask questions. We weren't allowed to talk. Oh, that's another thing. We weren't allowed to talk.
Were there any other instructions given to you at that time?
Yeah, there were everywhere assessed, you know, were looking after things. Eventually, I didn't see my brother, so I had to be more people than that, because I didn't see my brother, my older brother, who was 2 years older, in the hut yet. But when we went to the shower rooms, it's where I met him, right? So obviously there were quite a few people, more than I thought originally. And we just got some piece of soap, and we had the shower. When we came out of the showers, it was already in the evening, and things like it was very still in the air, you know. Sort of, we didn't hear much noises. Still, I didn't know anything about what's happening. We were given fairly brand new striped clothes, like pajamas, the cap, and no shoes. It was like wooden clocks. Right. Then we were gathered together and met my brother, and we started to stick together. And then we were marched. I remember marching through the gypsy camp, and eventually we arrived to the hut that we were put in. It was a very, very large hut. It looked everything new because it still smelled fresh from the timber of the bunks being built there. There was nothing there, just bunks. There was no blankets, no nothing. We just went in there. We have no food at all day, of course. We had to go into the bunks there. It was already in the evening. I was sleeping on the bunks, and then it started coming down. It was thundering and lightning and non-stop. It was really raining. And I was falling asleep. I had terrible, terrible nightmares all night. It was like, jerking all the time. Not through the thunder and lightning, that didn't feel, but like something like premonition that something has happened, you know. And of course, I asked my brother, where's our parents, where's the things, and he didn't know either yet, you know. It was very same. I think they got us up at 5 o'clock next morning, outside the hut. There were already mixed people from various parts of the world, not only from our area. We were mixed already, different, although they were Jews mostly, but they're from different areas already. We weren't allowed to talk at all. We were lined up in five in a row, and we were standing for a long, long time. And then, as we were facing there, we saw huge flames coming over from far away from those chimneys. You know, you could see them. So we said, oh, they're baking bread, they need a lot of bread here. You know, it's a lot of people here, sort of thing, you know. Sort of very, very naive, sort of thing. Eventually, about later on, some soup came. I remember it was a bowl. And you gave it to the first person on the row. And then as he had a bit from the bowl, he had to pass it on to the next one, to the next one. No spoons or anything like that. Just some mixture of a soup, pieces of bread and all kinds of things. I mean, most probably all the things they gathered from the transport, they came and they just put it into sort of one type of soup. Again, we were standing most of the day. It's called La Capelle, it's called. We weren't counted or anything. We were just standing in rows of five. And the next day after this heavy rain...
Who was guarding you when you were standing like that? Who was responsible for
that? I
didn't
see any SS that time. There were already car posts. I think it was mostly, funny enough, gypsy car posts, because it wasn't very far from the gypsy camp. And there was already kicking going on already, you know, anybody who didn't fall in what they wanted sort of thing.
When you were put in the hut, were there any... people who'd been in the camp for a long time there, or was it
no,
all
no,
new
this
inmates?
Hut is all new arrivals. Mm-hmm. In this particular hut there was all new arrivals, except those people, the overmasters, that were over us.
And they lived in the hut with you?
No, I don't remember that, no. They must probably didn't.
Were you given any instructions at that time by the capos?
Nothing, we just bunked in there and we were dog tired already, we just laid down. I remember that evening, a matter of fact, there was an air raid, a sirens going, and there were Russian planes flying over Birkenau, Auschwitz, but apparently going to Monowitz or anyway, bombing, later on they found out, bombing the rubber factories and so on, but nobody ever took any notice of Auschwitz as being such a vast, camp. Sort of thing, and we couldn't have help noticing if the planes, when they were passing over. Of course, it didn't mean anything to me still at the time. They didn't bomb the place or anything. And as I said, this was going on for about 3 days back from light, and I'm getting a little bit more thing because now feeling there's something, radically wrong. There's no, can't see any young people, can't see any old people. But still, I haven't got any clue what's happening. So I thought maybe somebody said they're working. Those that can work are in a different area to those that are not able to work. Because I explained before in the previous tape that our transport arrived mainly children up till 17 years of age, or 18, because anybody who was over 18 were already taken away till 45, except my father was only 39, but he had rheumatism in his leg, and they didn't take him to this thing. So, as I said, my parents were 39 at the time we arrived. So I was born in 1928, in the 25th of December, so I would have been 14 and a half. My brother was 2 years older, exact same date, and I had a sister who was 1 year, 3 years older than me. I didn't know what happened to her at the time. I didn't see her. I didn't see any women, for that matter. There was only, in this camp, was only, you could see males all the way through. So eventually, after the third day, we were gathered together, and it started pouring with rain again. It was really coming down. All our new pajama suits were all drenched already. It didn't look any more new. It had, you know, sort of thing. I remember we marched over with a lot of SS guarding, and we were marching through, back again through the gypsy camp, and we passed through women's camps. Of course, we couldn't talk, it was still quite a further away. We were going like between camps in like no man's land, between camps where it's, you see, barbed wires on both sides, it's sort of like a passage through. And it was pouring with rain. We got drenched. Says most of them wore those capes. And eventually we arrived in Auschwitz itself. By the way, as far as I've noticed, Birkenau only had huts. I haven't seen any buildings as such. But when we arrived in Auschwitz, there was no huts. It was all buildings. Either one or two story. I'm not quite sure. Even now I don't bother to watch even the show. And the thing which they were, but I think they were one-story buildings, very, very highly guarded, very, you know, with electronic wires and machine gun posts, huge machine gun posts every so often. Eventually, we came in, and immediately we went to the shower rooms. But this time, it was like you would go anywhere else, to a steam bath or anywhere else. It was not like in Birkenau itself. It was already more. Like here to stay, sort of thing, not a temporary thing. And we undressed again, we had to be deloused again after we'd been done 3 days before. But here, there were a lot of Polish Jews who have been already there since 1942, 43, some of them were mentioned, wife, and they were doing this job by, you know, inside in the baths and so on.
They were capos, were they?
No, they were not capos. They were ordinary prisoners. The capos are something different that was on the outside. You know, they were not. We were not marched by capos to Auschwitz. We were marched by the actual SS with dogs and all the paraphernalia. But when we arrived and we undressed and we were in the showers, they saw a lot of young boys there. You know, because I don't think there were many, especially from our area, there were anybody over 20. It was really either young boys or a certain age group who were over 45, a few. They turned around to say to us, my brother and me, they said, anybody who is not with you, or not with you anymore, forget about them. They've all been gassed and in the crematorium. You've seen those chimneys when you were in Birkenau. This is where they've been burned already. And this is the first I heard about anything. Of course, it's like somebody hitting you with a sledgehammer. You see, you're completely, first of all, you're frightened out of, since Birkenau in the last 3 days, I've been frightened out of my wits. You know, it was a kid still, you know, and I couldn't get my thing. And this is another one of those punches you got, which is absolutely, so, we just took it, and I can't be, you know, thinking to yourself, it can't be so. You know, that's what you say to yourself.
When did you realize that it was likely to be true?
Well, you had to thinking very in the long run. Well, I come back to it, you know, at a later stage, after the all the camps. And so we came into this place, and we bedded down. This time it's already proper bunks with blankets, and they gave us actually a piece of bread with a piece of salami.
Could you describe the interior of the barracks at Auschwitz?
Well, I wouldn't call them barracks. They were more like one-story buildings. And they looked very clean inside, and there were rooms. I think it was... each house had like four sections, what I remember. You know, and I was on the first floor, not on the ground floor. And there was windows, and as you look through the windows, you could see everywhere those huge towers with the machine gun posts everywhere. You know, and the electric wires, you know, with those cement built gate, you know, sort of posts where they were attached to those wires. And so we arrived, I think, late afternoon. And once we came out from the shower rooms, we were given again different second-hand, this time striped suits. And I've got actually a pair of shoes, not clogs, a pair of boots I got.
Was there any attempt to give you clothes that fitted, or were you just handed
no,
out just, whatever was
there? No,
just
handed out, you know.
Were there any squabbles between prisoners trying to get things that
were? Not at all. No, that was already, everybody was very subdued sort of thing, and it wasn't a question I had. And don't forget, you practically didn't eat for 3 days. Although you had the soup, you'd already been more than 3 days. You had the train journey, and you had arrived in Auschwitz, which you didn't, in Birkenau, which you have no food at all. And then, except maybe if people what they brought with them, they munched, you know, from the train still. But then we only got that soup in the morning, and I never seen anything else. Because at that time, you didn't think so much of food yet. You still got your vitality from before you came. And so after, as I said, we came out of the shower rooms, we went straight to this hut there, and it looked very clean. It's a place to get a rest, and there's not so much shouting going around. There were young prisoners, you know, like my age, a bit older, who were, you know, helping along for people to settle in and so on. There were no SS in the actual building itself. All I remember is standing by the window, and there were some older ones in standing outside the window, and they said to themselves, they said, "We'll never get out alive out of here." And I remember staring out and thinking, I'm thinking about it today, what I thought at the time, that I should make every effort, the utmost, to come out alive out of here. Because already, at a certain age group, which already started giving up, you know, already started losing hope. Being my age at the time, I wouldn't have dreamt of things like that, to give up.
What, when you say a certain age group had already given up hope, do you mean the older prisoners?
Well, anybody who was 20 or 18 or over there, thing, there were still people, a certain amount, who were not from different areas than my area, who came at different ages to the camp. Right? But when I said in my particular area, there were only young boys and older people. But once we were mixed with all kind of other prisoners, it was already from different countries they came, right? So there were different age groups coming already. Mostly people that were maybe between 20 and 30, who to me at that time was old. Anyway, the next morning we got up and we started queuing us up to get those numbers, to get the numbers. Remember my second cousin was there, my brother and I, we were standing in a row next to each other, and there were some young prisoner, you know, Jewish boys who were with a fountain pen and standing, and he said, "I'm going to make you a small number," which I actually have, I remember him saying that, "He's doing me a favor, he's making me a small number." So my brother got my second cousin got A3104, who is at the moment of I'm talking is alive and he's in Israel. My brother got 3105 and I've got 3106.
What was the advantage? You say you talked about a small number. What was the advantage of having a small number?
I don't know, because people are running around with big, long numbers. So maybe for other purposes it's not so notable. Should you have managed to escape or anything like that, maybe it wouldn't be so easy, right? It was just out of kindness that he did it to me, right? Because I've seen other people with long, big letters on full of practically covering their arm. Or in Birkenau, they used to do it under, what do you call this?
The forearm.
The forearm. And in Auschwitz, most of them got on the back of the arm, on the front. So in Eichfek A stands for Auschwitz, and when the numbers, those were tattooed in Birkenau, had a B. My number is very small because that's the transport just started arriving from a certain area, and that's the first few thousand, so the number is rather a small number in numerical letters. Mm-hmm. You asked me that question.
If we return to the barracks for a few moments, could you say, were there any differences in accommodation for different types of prisoners in the barracks, like, for example, the capos or the ordinary prisoners?
Well, as far as I remember, this particular place, barracks, huts and buildings we were in, I wouldn't call them barracks, they were buildings, must have been strictly for transit purposes, where people just came, stayed a certain and then they transported them either to Germany or to the other camps around the Auschwitz perimeter, which was 14 square miles of camps, which we found out afterwards. There were no cabos immediately with us because we weren't on a working group. We didn't go out to work there. We didn't do anything specific there. We were just in the rooms there. You know, we just got, coffee in the morning and a piece of bread and maybe a soup there. It wasn't too bad, the food comparatively, you know, better than it was in Birkenau. At least we got something.
Were there any arrangements made for cleaning and organizing of the hut?
I remember, yes, you had to make your own beds, you know, things, and it was very, very clean. With blankets, another blanket, and then you had to sort of, there was sort of like a piece of wood which you straightened out, you made it absolutely straight. I can't remember any hardship yet, or any pushy orders or anything. We, as I said, we were just there for 3 days as a on a transit blocks.
Mm-hmm. What about lighting and heating?
Oh, this was already more civilized there in a comparison to Birkenau, because in Birkenau the barracks had no lights. The ones I was in were just pitch dark at night. There was nothing, no amenities whatsoever. Here, I can't remember going to the toilet, I can't think, but I don't think there were toilets in the building. I think there were latrines outside. Must have been gone with them, but this is something which is important to the sense, you know, that is, I would have remembered so much about it, which of course you remember at where you stay longer.
Were the huts lit in Auschwitz?
Oh yes, there was lit.
And when did the lights go out?
Well, it's usually about 9 o'clock. After being there 3 days, we were gathered a small group, my brother and I, and 25 of us total only. My second cousin didn't come with us, and some other boys from my hometown and various things, only a certain amount. We were 25 of us, and they put us on a lorry, and with SS, and they'd driven us a certain, I can't remember the time factor, and we arrived in a place called Fürstengrube, which is not far from Katowice. It was not a very large camp. I think it only held about 1,200, 1,400. There were only 4 machine gun posts in each end, so it couldn't have been all that big.
Was it surrounded like barbed wire?
Yes, barbed wire. And as it came through the main gate, there was a band there, mostly consisting of Dutch Jewish, you know, and is playing a proper symphony bands, you know, as you know, playing classical music and all this type of thing, that's going in and going out sort of thing. When we arrived, the 25 of us, we put in and straight into a barrack, and the capos came. For no reason whatsoever, they start hitting left, right, and center, in the belly, in the face, in the, what's the name, like boxing, without being able to box back. And explaining to us, of course I spoke German quite well, I mean, understood everything from Yiddish and German I learned as well, so. Big fellows, you know, plenty of fat on them, telling us that we arrived in a Strafslager, we arrived in a penalty camp, and to prove why hitting us, why they're beating us, is to prove that we are in a Strafslager. Right. We were there a certain time, and then we were distributed, rather than I and the others, into another place.
Were you split up then, put into different barracks,
or did
you stay as a group?
My brother and I were together.
And the rest
so
of the,
he was still underage, you know, sort of in the years.
The rest of the 25, I meant, were you in, as a group by then, or were you split into different
barracks? I think they were older ones. The younger ones stayed, the younger ones were put in a special block.
Why was that a special block?
I'll explain that at a later stage. And they gave soup. The soup consisted of water. I could go and cut grass for my garden, and it will taste exactly the same. Here and there was a little noodle from a piece of bread swimming in it. It was absolutely bitter. The only thing I remember is that we couldn't eat it, and the other prisoners were queuing up and waiting for us to not to eat it. And they were just, gulping down. So I said, we're in for something here, good and proper. They left a few days, I think. I started doing some work inside the camp. We're carrying 50 kilo cement bags, carrying that thing. As it got organized a bit, they gathered a certain amount of the young boys under a certain age, and we were put in a special block. It's called, and they called us Bergschule. Means translated coal mining school. My brother still was with me, because still was in that age, which is a thing. We were only about 10 boys. And they marched us with the others, but we were in a special group going down the coal mine. Now, the system of the camp was like this. Well, naturally, there was the Lagerführer, which is SS. The Lager Elster, which was a prisoner, political prisoner on it, but from Germany. And then there was the Kapos. And then there was the Vorarbeiters, and then was the Block Elster, and then was the Stubenelster, which is all in succession of things.
Which did you have contact with as an ordinary prisoner?
What I heard at the time was that the Lager Elster, who was a political prisoner, a very, very tall man, it must have been for many years, maybe prior in other concentration camps and so on. It's already, gone through the mills and so on. They already had a very top authority and so on. Has said, objected to boys under 16 going into coal mines. It's against the law, to that effect. Apparently, he's been in contact with Auschwitz because he was the only prisoner actually that went out of the camps, apparently, to see women and so on, so I've heard. And he complained to Auschwitz itself, saying that how dare you send boys under 16 to coal mines. So what actually happened afterwards, we heard that the message came back, we don't know any boys under 16 being in the concentration camp. We were afraid, in case, he's rocking the boat. But what he did do, he arranged, I'll come to that after. He arranged that a soup should be brought down by the SS to us,